Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up with science.
You mean you don't use a shoe?
No, we use the latest in technology and innovation to eliminate bugs, termites, weeds, and more.
No spray cans and lighters?
None of that. Only solutions that target insect biology, using chemistry to help protect the environment, people, and their pets.
Huh. Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up. Call 886-3029 or visit EssentialPest.com.
Excuse me, where are your quick fix, do-it-yourself cans of Freon for your car?
Aisle 7.
Let's see. The cheapest one is $29.95. Man, $49.95. I'll go with the $29.95. Hey, who are you?
I'm your Perfection Auto Works guardian angel.
And what brings you here?
My wings. What do you mean, what brings me here? I'm here to save you from making a terrible mistake.
That seems a little funny.
What? Funny? Like a clown? Do I amuse you? You have no idea what you're doing. Check out the warnings on this can. It can blow you to bits. It's under pressure. You know how many people have joined me after trying to do it themselves?
So what do I do?
Well, get over to Perfection Auto Works for the $49.95 AC tune-up. I gotta go. Some guy's on a bridge.
Listen to the Perfection Auto Works Guardian Angel. Take advantage of our $49.95 AC tune-up special. 323-8650 and PerfectionAutoWorks.com.
Yeah, funny like a clown, huh?
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. Some advisors say they do everything. Take that with a grain of salt. In fact, take it with a whole salt mine. We specialize in guiding you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. We refer you to other services so that we have no conflicts of interest. Reach us at 777-1911. That's 777-1911 or WilkinsonWealthMGMT.com.
Hello, insiders, and a very pleasant good afternoon to you wherever you may be. This is Eb Wilkinson, along with my co-host sitting in, Frank Antonori, coming to you live from the KVOI Bustos Media Megaplex, welcoming you to another action-packed adventure of Inside Track. Bruce is taking a well-deserved day off. Producer Tom's running the board and making it all happen. We've got another great show for you today in just a few moments. We're going to be talking with Frank Antonori discussing the upcoming elections and, quite frankly, whatever the hell else he wants to talk about. Frank's here in studio with us. In the second hour, NRA past president John Sigler joins us. We're going to be discussing the history and current status of the NRA, competitions, his running for the board, and a general overview of the upcoming elections. Frank and I invite you to pull up a chair and enjoy all of our great guests on today's show, while you drive around town or work at home. And before we hear from our special guests, let's do a quick shout-out to our great Inside Track supporters, Essential Pest, Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus, Perfection Auto Works, and Wilkinson Wealth Management. Bruce and I support each one of these locally-owned, family-run businesses. So should you. Producer Tom is going to be taking your relevant comments and questions for our guests today. We invite you to call us at 790-2040. So let's get right to it. We're joined in studio today with Frank Antonori. Frank was born and raised in Scranton, Pennsylvania. He joined the Army after graduating from high school in 1984. In 1987, he volunteered for the Special Forces Green Berets. In the 1980s, he trained Afghan Mujahideen fighters to fight against the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. He then served in the first Iraq War, that's Desert Storm. 10 years later, he was deployed in war again to Afghanistan and fought in Operation Anaconda. After that, he was deployed in Iraq, where he was recommended for the Silver Star and awarded the Bronze Star for Valor. In 2006, he authored a memoir called Roughneck 9-1, the extraordinary story of a Special Forces A-team at war based on his experiences in the Iraq War. In June 2004, he retired from the military and moved to Tucson. He currently works as a senior program manager in the aerospace defense industry, and he oversees development of advanced precision munitions, missiles, and weapons for the U.S. military. Frank, Welcome to Inside Track.
Damn, that's a heck of an intro, man. Thanks so much for that.
Yeah, I made up half of it, but it sounded good.
It sounds good. I look back at that resume, and it took me 40 years, obviously, to build that resume. But
an overnight success after 40 years.
Yeah, 40 years.
What have you been up to?
Well, real quick, I'm actually running for office out in Cochise County.
Okay.
That's not why I'm here, though. I just want to put it out there. I'm running for county supervisor out there. But, you know, I'm here to talk about the disturbing things I've seen over the last couple of years. It's actually gotten worse with regard to the state of the electorate in our country. And you know, to the point where, you know, you have Taylor Swift making political endorsements and telling people who to vote for.
Oh,
and
my
people,
God. Here we go again.
Yeah, people will just blindly follow somebody like that and decide who they're going to vote for without actually doing any homework or research into it. And I think back to when I was a kid in high school. And, you know, I had a great history teacher in high school. And at the time, my entire family was Democrat. My father was a Democrat.
Really?
Yeah, he was a union guy. My mother was a Kennedy Democrat. My grandmother was an FDR Democrat. And I grew up in you know, rural Pennsylvania. And luckily, I had some teachers, which you will not have in today's schools. But back then, the teacher said, hey, you know, you guys are all going to be turning 18 soon. You're probably all going to be able to vote in the next coming presidential election. Don't listen to anybody, you know, out of hand. Don't take anybody's word, including, you know, your friends or family or whatever. Do some homework. Examine the candidates. Do some research. And I actually took a few minutes. Back then, we didn't have internet, right? We didn't have what we have today. You can't Google nothing. But so I just, you know, paid more attention to what was going on. A lot of it was stuff I got from the media back then, which was mainly just television and newspapers and the radio and whatnot. But, you know, became clear to me that there was a stark difference between the two candidates that were running for president, where I was getting ready, you know, and I'm 17 years old and I'm in high school and my 18th birthday is coming up. And that November, after my 18th birthday, I'm going to be able to vote for president of the United States. So I realized, you know, that the alignment that I had was more in line with a guy named Ronald Reagan. And Ronald Reagan had already been president for 4 years back then. He was elected in 1980. I was in 1984. I was a senior in high school. And I thought about what he was doing. I saw the contrast between him and Jimmy Carter. And then I saw the contrast between him and Walter Mondale. And I said to myself, God, I'm not a Democrat. I said, I can't believe my dad is a Democrat. I can't believe my poor mother is a Democrat. The Democratic Party doesn't believe in any of the fundamental principles outlined by our founders and the Constitution and stuff that I said, I'm a Republican. So after my
But let me interrupt.
Sure.
So up until that point, have you looked and read the Constitution and looked at all that and just never compared it to?
No, I didn't do any of that. Like most high school kids, I was too busy playing football and chasing cheerleaders. You know, that's what high school kids
okay.
do. You know, and I didn't pay much. But as I was getting older, I realized, hey, I'm about to graduate. I'm going to go out into the real world, and I need to start growing up a little bit. And reality kind of started hitting me sort of in the head. I had already enlisted into the Army in the delayed entry program. So I knew I was going into the military, and I'm thinking to myself, who would I want to be the commander in chief? Who would I want to be the guy that sends me to war if we have to go to war? You know, those decisions started to sink in, and I started to wake up and realize, hey, I better get my act together. So it was about 2 weeks after my 18th birthday. My dad at dinner one night says, hey, you're 18 now. You know, you gotta go register to vote, and you gotta sign up for the draft, because that was the other big thing back then.
Sure,
you had to sign up for the draft. And he says, "Hey, you need to, when you get out of school, when you get off the bus, you know, run into the post office, because we were right down the street from the post office." He goes, "Run to the post office and fill that card out, you know, because you can't get a college a loan, or you can't unless you fill that out." Back then, that's
the selective service.
Yeah, selective service. If you didn't sign up, you weren't eligible for anything. Plus, I was already in the military, so it really didn't matter.
Plus, by law, you had to sign up.
Yeah, by law, that's true. So I went down there and I registered as a Republican and signed up for the draft. And then I came home at dinner that night. My dad's like, hey, so you're good? You registered? I go, yep, Dad, I registered to vote. He goes, good, we'll be looking forward. We'll be voting for Mondale. I go, nope, I'm not voting for Mondale. And he's like, what do you mean? I said, I'm voting for Reagan. He goes, Reagan? I go, yep. I said, I'm not a Democrat, Dad. I'm sorry. I I just don't believe in what the Democratic Party believes. I said I did a little homework. I see what Reagan stands for: limited government, less taxes, strong military, strong national defense, individual responsibility. You know, I said that's what I see is the route. I said I see the, you know, Mondale's promising, you know, to raise taxes. He's promising to give away tax dollars to people that don't work and don't want it, or don't earn it rather. And he's going to weaken our military. I know you got, wait, back then this was in the middle of the Cold War. You know, we had the Russians always breathing down our neck, and people just, you know, I said I can't be part of that. You know, and I said, yeah, I'm sorry. And he was upset. You know, he was somewhat upset. And but, you know, I walked into the, back then you had to physically go into the voting booth.
Oh, yeah.
We had the little machines where you click.
You had to physically pull the levers.
Yeah, pull the little levers. And I walked out, and the very first vote I cast was for Ronald Reagan, because he was at the top of the ticket. And of course, you're voting for his electors, but technically I was voting for Ronald Reagan right out of the gate. And then about 4 years later, while I was in the military, I got a call from my dad, who had told me he had seen the light.
Really?
Yeah, he had retired.
What was he doing?
He was, at the time, he worked for the federal government. He was a federal employee in the federal employee union. He was a union guy. And then he retired and he opened up a business.
Okay.
And 2 years.
And now he started signing the front of the checks.
That's right. 2 years into that business, as he would fill out all the, and have his accountant tell him how much taxes he had to pay, and how hard he worked getting that business off the ground, and hours he was putting in, and the amount of money he had to give to the government, but both the federal, state, and local governments, he just said, this is pathetic. He never realized that before, because he just, you know, got his paycheck and he worked for the government. And the union told him who to vote for and who they're backing and everything, and he didn't realize it. But once he became an individual businessman, then he realized, and he says, you know what? He goes, you're right. He goes, I'm not a Democrat anymore. He goes, I'm a Republican. He switched and became a Republican. And about a year after that, my mother switched. And my mother switched on one issue. My mother and my grandmother are devout Catholics.
Okay.
And my mother...
good Italian Catholics.
That's right. And then all of a sudden, when she realized that the Democratic Party went all in for abortion, and that the Republican Party was opposed to abortion on demand, that was what sealed it for her. And she switched and became a Republican. And both of them have been Republicans since. And that was like 36 years ago, 35 years ago.
Why do you think the Catholic Church has still maintained a close relationship with the Democratic Party?
The current Pope, you know, has a socialist streak within him that I think is the biggest driver. And a lot of Catholics confuse compassion with socialism, and that's some of the biggest problem I deal with. You can be charitable, you can be compassionate, but you don't have to basically buy into these wealth distribution principles. If you want to voluntarily donate money to a cause that you deem worthy, or give a handout to somebody, you know, that's one thing. But when it comes to the point where you support taking money from someone against their will to give it to someone else, that's where the line should be drawn. And that's really the difference between what I believe is a Republican, and I think what most Republicans believe is they support charity. And they do it on their own.
Very much so.
They do it on their own.
They do it without looking for a tax write-off.
That's right. And they believe in the causes they give in, and they let the free market. So a good cause will receive contributions and donations from people willing to support that cause, and a bad cause will not. So when the Democrats found out that they weren't getting money from their bad causes, they went to the government and created the grant system, where the government would give them grants. So they couldn't get the money on their own merit as a charitable organization. So they got the government to give them grants, and they've been funding their quote unquote charitable organizations and their groups ever since. And that's the problem. I mean, it just frustrates me to see that.
So let me ask you this question. Speaking of that, we know the federal government gives grants to study everything from exercising shrimp to you name it.
Lesbian dance theory or whatever,
like,
it was.
Exactly.
Right.
Which I've got nothing wrong with that, but don't have the federal government fund it. But does the state government do that as well?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
State. So you were in the state house?
State Senate, yeah.
State Senate.
Yep.
Okay. And that was 2 years?
2 years, yeah.
Okay. What did you see there?
I mean, we... We have a system that is designed to get people most of the time into a position of authority and influence, using people with influence to do that. And when you get there, because these people helped you get there, there's this sense of obligation to listen to them more than to the general public and the constituency that voted for you as a whole, because they funded your campaign. They gave you the big contributions. They gave you the, and what's really frustrating, instead of giving
now,
you.
Now, are we talking leadership or are we talking lobbyists?
I'm talking big donors and lobbyists.
Okay.
Right? These people that give you large amounts of money expect something in return for that money. And lobbyists also bundle, right? So they'll get numerous clients to donate money to you. And even though each one's only given you $1,000, you know, there'll be like 30 of them, right? So you end up with $30,000. And that lobbyist will remind you that, hey, I raised 30 grand for your campaign. And I have this bill now that I'd like you to get behind and co-sponsor and vote for and stuff. And, you know, my problem was the reason I had such a hard time raising money when I ran, and I ran for Congress too. And I remember going up to D.C. and meeting with a bunch of folks up there, and you know, they said, hey, we're willing to support you, but if you want our support, you have to agree to do this X, Y, and Z. And I said, well, I can't. I'm not going to do that. I said, I have this philosophy. This is my political philosophy. And I thought you guys had this political philosophy. So if you and your philosophy and my philosophy are aligned, I'd appreciate your support. And they go, well, it aligns to a degree, but that degree is we also want you to support this. And I said, well, I can't make promises. I'm not going to promise that I'm going to vote for something, and I don't even know what it is yet. There's no bill, there's no thing, but they're asking in advance in exchange for getting money, and I wouldn't take it. So I had this rough time raising money, and a lot of congressmen, including some of the folks I ran against in that race, would say, yeah, oh yeah, I'll do it, and they would get the check.
Yeah.
And that's to a degree the issue in politics, is the influence that goes in there.
Yeah, you've got to sign the bill before you can find out what's in the bill.
Yeah. Yeah, and but a lot of it is, you know, and I have people all the time that complain about that, and, you know, and I was just at an event last week, and at that event I had a room of supporters that I asked to support my effort to run for office in Cochise County, and at the end of the night, I asked for a contribution to the campaign. If you believe in what I just told you, I'd appreciate your support. Will you support me?
So when you did this, was there a price to get into the event?
No.
So it's
no,
and it's not even a price to get out.
No.
However, it's
no.
Just
at the
I'm
going
to tell you what I feel,
right?
What
right.
I believe.
It was kind of town hall-y type.
Okay.
You know, but I invited a bunch of people to come, and I said, hey, let's chat about this. And then at the end of the night, I said, hey, if you believe in what I believe in, if you have this principle that you believe that, you know, the grassroots and the you know, rank and file voter, the average guy needs to have a voice, I'm your guy. And I'd appreciate your support, you know, because, you know, my opponents were getting money from various organizations and groups. I said, so would you be willing to help me out? And what was astonishing to me, there was about 30 people there. And I was thinking, well, if everybody gave me $20 or $50, you know, I might pull in, you know, $400 or $500. I pulled in $105.
And wow.
I said to myself, I said, they all stood there crying to me about how upset they are about the money in politics and how these big donors and lobbyists funnel money to candidates and then they're owned by those candidates. And then when I ask them to help, they just wouldn't help, you know, and they agreed with everything I said. And it's just frustrating. And I see that within the party, within the Republican Party. There's a lot of people that cry and complain about the way things are. And then when they're asked to either do one of two things, step up and volunteer and help go knock on doors and help a candidate get elected, or open your wallet and give that candidate that you believe in a campaign contribution to help him or her win, they just don't do it. And that's the sad state. On the other side of the equation, the Democrats have two huge allies, right? They got the Hollywood elite and some of the more Wall Street elite now, the tech industry that opens up their checkbooks in huge amounts for the Democratic Party. And then they have this ability to raise large amounts of money from small contributions by using these various groups to send out emails and say, hey, donate $10, $20, you know, like the Bernie Sanders phenomenon, right? Where he raised you know, millions and millions of $10 and $20 contributions using this network. And on our side, we don't really have that network built in. So when you look at the cash haul that Kamala Harris, and I was just reading about it yesterday, you know, she's raised almost three times as much as Trump raised, and everybody's crying about that. And I said, so did you send Trump a check? You know, did you send him $500 or $100 or $20 even? You know, and they're like, oh, you know, so, well, that's why. You know, and that's the frustration where I just get frustrated with people that get mad at the way things are, but then don't want to put the effort in to change it.
What about the reports that I'm seeing where somebody knocks on a door and says, hey, I see you've donated this much money to the Democratic Party, and it's some ungodly amount of money.
Yeah.
And you've donated, you know, $500 at a time to all these different candidates, and you've donated, you know, $25,000, $30,000 in the 2024 election. She says, I have no idea what you're talking about. I live on a fixed income. There's no way I would donate that. I've donated $20 in the past, but not the $10,000 that you're talking about.
See, there's a mechanism within the federal campaign finance system because it's all digitized. And the campaigns are responsible for providing that digitized information that's in there. And because you have to show if you spend money where that money came from. And it can come from the candidate's pocket. It can come from a donor. It can come from the party. But you have to show that on your campaign finance report. So those two numbers have to balance, the spend dollars and the income dollars. So what they do, though, is if you receive a contribution of, I believe, at the federal level, it's more than $100, you have to put the name, address, and the occupation of the individual that gave you that money. So what they will do is they will go through the old federal election databases and find people that donated at $20, $30 10 years ago or a long time ago. They've been detached. When they were younger, a long time ago, and you could go find anybody's record on the FEC.gov website. And once you do that, what they do is, since they've noticed they have not been donating anymore, so they don't have to worry about creating a trigger when they reach a threshold, they'll donate a smaller amount, you know, like $2,500 or $2,000, because it will, the cumulative number, as long as it doesn't go over, I think it's $5,800, it doesn't affect anything. So as long as they don't trigger an overpayment, then that creates a problem because you got to pay these people back.
Oh,
if they keep it low.
If they did that, and then the real person donated money, it would trigger that.
Correct.
Got it. Okay.
Correct. So what they do is they find these people that aren't politically active or politically contributing anymore, and then they find a big donor who has already exceeded that $5,800 limit and can't give that candidate any more money legally, but still wants to give that candidate money. They donate money to less scrupulous people.
Wow.
Who then go through that database and find those names and attribute that donation from that big donor to these people that are little donors. And that's happening. Everybody knows that's happening. It's actually gone on for years and years and years and years. I mean, we had the case with the nuns, with Al Gore.
Yes.
Right? Where all these nuns that swore an oath to poverty were donating money to the Gore campaign, right? And
jeez,
it's like, this has been something that's occurred within politics. It's just very seldom enforced. You know, we just don't have people that are willing to enforce it because they create that partisan sort of atmosphere at the federal level, including in the Justice Department, where they don't want to go after their own. So they just turn a blind eye and they ignore it. And that's going on. We were talking, you and I, about Merrick Garland.
Right.
Yeah, crying the other day, we're not a partisan agency. We treat everybody equally. And I'm laughing and, you know, sitting on my couch laughing.
Yeah, some people are more equal than others.
With my Coke Zero coming out my nose because I can't keep it down listening to this guy lie. You know, you had all the examples of a double standard that's gone on just in the last two election cycles, let's say, where Hillary Clinton was let off the hook for bleach bidding, you know, 30,000 emails and for
Joe Biden was let off for being a feeble old man.
Exactly. But Trump, you know, they put the cross in the front of the White House and they nail the guy to it, right? They're going to nail him, and you got three states prosecuting.
And then they started on fire and then accuse him of a religious hate crime.
Yeah. So you can't sit idly by. An average rational person, if you look at the facts, can't not ignore the fact that there is a bias in the system, and it's there. I mean, we saw it here. You know, one of the theories I have about what happened in 2022 here in Arizona is there was a significant amount of ballot harvesting occurring in Arizona.
Yes.
And some of those ballots being harvested, and we've seen data that says that
and video.
Some of these registered voters didn't exist. The addresses that they were registered at was Walmart and Circle K and empty lots and apartment buildings that have six different people registered at the same address. And again, but it was never thoroughly investigated. No law enforcement agency really put the effort into it, whether it's state or federal, you know, and that's the frustration. And it creates an atmosphere of distrust amongst the electorate. And then the conspiracy theories, some of them may be valid in their theory, and some of them are just extrapolated to some insanity, but it does shake the confidence of the average voter when they hear things like this and they see these large numbers of voters. I mean, just right now in Cochise County, David Stevens, the county recorder out there, told me he received all of these new voter registrations, somewhere around 3,000 voter registrations, and he can't find 407 of them.
Wow.
407, he sent them letters telling them to verify and validate their identity, and he gets no response back.
Well, listen, we're coming to the bottom of the break,
sure.
Bottom of the hour break. We're going to be right back with Frank Antinori after we hear from our sponsors, and we're going to come right back to that voter registration in Cochise County. Stay tuned. No channel flipping.
There she is. I see her. It's the voice of a goddess.
I'm going to faint.
Today is today. And yesterday was today yesterday. Tomorrow will be today tomorrow. Today is tomorrow. And yesterday was today yesterday. Tomorrow will be today today.
Look! The Empress has no clothes!
He's right. I see that.
You know, at Perfection Auto Works, we see things that you may not be aware of. Since 1994, we give you the honest truth when it comes to your car. Next time your car makes crazy noises, call 323-8650 and perfectionautoworks.com.
Essential pest control leaves bugs belly up with science.
You mean you don't use a shoe?
No, we use the latest in technology and innovation to eliminate bugs, termites, weeds, and more.
No spray cans and lighters?
None of that. Only solutions that target insect biology, using chemistry to help protect the environment, people, and their pets.
Huh. Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up. Call 886-3029 or visit EssentialPest.com.
Customers come first at Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus.
My main goal is to make everything easy for the customer, whether every decision I make in terms of business is, will this make sense for the customer, and is this make it easier for the customer to come and look at material, how the yard is organized, what material we cover, what material we offer, anything like that.
Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. Call 209-1579. Stop by the yard, 701 East 36th Street. Open Monday through Saturday.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. When people turn 50, something miraculous happens. They start to get serious about retirement planning. They've done very well so far and want to be certain they power into the retirement they've earned. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911. Welcome back to Inside Track. Frank's here. Eb's here. Bruce is still on vacation. And when we left, we were talking about the 407 ballots that came in.
Voter registrations.
Oh, I'm sorry, voter registrations that came in.
Right.
Out of
And they can't be verified.
Okay, so what happens when they can't be verified?
So they're set aside, and the recorder's office makes an attempt to find them. You know, makes a valid attempt, and they do that through mail. Or if they put a phone number on the ballot registration or the voter registration, they try to call them and reach them. They've already done that, and they've been not able to successfully reach these people. So any that they can't cure.
So that's 407 out of the 3,000.
Yeah, 3,000 new voter registrations. So this is since the primary, I think they've gotten 3,000 voter registrations. So.
Oh, since the primary.
Yeah, since the primary.
Okay.
I forgot what it is for the year. I think it was since the last election cycle. It's been like 8,000, 9,000, something like that. I don't know for sure. I that's not an accurate number. I'll say that up front. I you know, Dave would have to be the guy I talked to. But he did tell me it was, you know, 407 that he right now is in the process of trying to verify. And if he's unable to verify them, then they don't get a ballot and they don't get put on the rolls. And he's following the law, and that's what the law says. If you can't verify that they're a legitimate voter, you don't put them on the books.
So you use the word cure. What does that mean?
Cure means people make mistakes. Right. So, for example, somebody sends in a ballot, let's say, and they forget to sign it. You can call them in and tell them to come into the recorder's office, show their ID, and allow them to sign that ballot. And that cures the ballot.
Oh, okay.
All right. So the ballot is cured.
Is now a valid ballot.
It's now a valid ballot. So when you do a voter registration and there's information missing from that voter registration and the county recorder is unable to verify that, they will send you a notice and say, please come in with this information, electric bill, you know, a bank statement, an ID card, or multiple ID, you know.
Sure.
And show me, and then we'll cure your voter registration, allow you to vote.
But something that you would normally have in your wallet.
Correct.
Or purse, not judging.
Right. So if what Stevens told me is he isn't getting any responses. So he's sending letters to the addresses, and he's trying to call the phone numbers, and there's nothing there. And that's what's kind of interesting, that he's stumbled across this. And my concern is that's a Republican county, a Republican county recorder who's following the letter of the law. And in the two most populated counties in Cochise County, we have Democrat recorders that may not be as strict and as stringent as Mr. Stevens is in Cochise County.
So they might allow those to go through.
That's correct.
Okay.
And the vast majority of them are what's known as PEVL, permanent early voter list voter registrations, which means they will forever
be getting a ballot
in the mail, and they will not have to physically identify themselves in person anywhere. They will sign their ballot and they will go in. So some of the things, for example, that David Stevens does in Cochise County is he uses multiple sources to verify signatures. So when you send in your voter registration or your ballot, he looks at your last voter election, right? He'll pull that one.
Okay.
He'll pull your driver's license because there is a signature on everybody's driver's license. He will pull other state records and deeds. Because he's, you know, and see what your signature, and he's got it all on his computer, and he'll look at four or five different sources. Some county recorders, because of time, quote unquote, don't have the time to do that level of sort of research to make sure that those signatures are all matching.
So they just ship it out.
So they click it, they look at one signature, and in the case that was going on in Pinal County, they looked at the last mail-in ballot signature and see if the last mail-in ballot signature matches the first. Well, if the last mail-in ballot signature was fraudulent, of course it's going to match the second mail-in ballot. But if you were to go pull the driver's license, it may not match. If you were to go pull their tax return, their state tax return signature, it may not match.
Oh, I didn't even think they could get that.
Oh, yeah. The state, they have access to all that public data. So that is the way you verify it. But do the county recorders make that effort? And I would submit probably not.
So is there a common denominator with these 407 ballot requests, registrations?
The common denominator is...
He can't verify them.
Can't verify them. They're all PEVL requests. These aren't people that are registering to vote that plan on voting in person. I think all of them are requesting early ballots, permanent early ballots.
So it would seem to me that raises a red flag right there.
Sure. But again, he's doing the due diligence to prevent that from happening in Cochise County. The question is that happening across the state?
Okay, so if he does that there, to what level, where's law enforcement in all this?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. You know, you would think the attorney general would look into what is potentially an issue, and he will make a determination. Now, he is going to make that effort, and if he thinks that there's something fishy there, he will turn it in to law enforcement to have law enforcement investigate it. So, you know, that agency, I believe, that he uses will, I don't know if it's going to be the Cochise County Sheriff's Department or a state agency or whatever, but he will, if he sees something that he believes is fraudulent, he will turn it over to law enforcement.
What does the post office do with undeliverable ballots?
They send them back to the county recorder.
Okay.
And the county recorder is required to account for all of the ballots that go out and come back that are basically not received by a valid address. So if they are undeliverable, if the post office is able to, if they go to a vacant lot and they can't find a mailbox.
Or a Walmart.
They return those ballots back to the, they're supposed to return those ballots back to the county recorder's office.
Well, see, that sounds crazy in a way because if it goes to a vacant lot, who's going to get the ballot?
Yeah, so what was happening in Phoenix, and I don't know if you ever saw the, I forgot the YouTube guy that came down here and he pulled.
James O'Keefe?
Yeah, they pulled like 200 voter registrations and they found out that these were empty buildings. And they had like 30 mailboxes there that were all empty mailboxes because nobody lived it. It's like an abandoned apartment complex or old houses that were getting ballots, and they found out that nobody lived there. Or they have a community mailbox, right, where you see 25 mailbox out by the street.
Sure.
And then, you know, the concern was that somebody waited for the mailman to come and deliver the mail and then pulled all those ballots out and then somebody filled them out. Now, that's speculation. There's no evidence to prove that, right? It's just that, you know, just this weird phenomenon that we have these vacant houses or large complexes that, you know, had all these people that supposedly received an early ballot, and there's no evidence that, you know, they filled it out and mailed it in. Now, they could have done that and moved away to another state so that, you know, the other side will always say, well, you can't prove that. They could have voted and moved to Texas, or they could have voted and moved. And now that they're not there, you can't just say because they're not there that it wasn't a valid vote.
Let's go back to Texas. I saw that Governor Abbott instructed some reforms there, and there were 1 million people taken off the rolls for voting.
Yeah, one of the problems there was Texas had not been very proactive in cleaning their voter rolls. So they had years and years and years of what would be called inactive, unverifiable voters that were on that list. And for some reason, they weren't, whether it was at the county level, which is mostly where this occurs at, is at the county level in the state of Texas, those county recorders in those Texas counties weren't actively working to clean their voter rolls. So what Texas did is they mandated by law, and of course was signed by the governor, and then they sent auditors, state auditors, to these counties to verify that the county recorders were following the law. And when they did that, after years and years of neglect, they found tens of thousands, if not millions, of people that were inactive voters, that were deceased, that had left the state, that were no longer voting or couldn't find any record of them voting, so they were taken off the rolls. We have that same rule here in Arizona. If you haven't voted, I believe, is in 6 election cycles, you're put on the inactive list.
Okay.
And you stop getting ballots at that point.
Okay.
And you would have a difficult time getting a ballot at a polling place. You would be able to get a provisional ballot, but you will not get a ballot until your voter registration could be verified. So we've been doing that in Arizona for years. And again, it's a degree at which the county recorders do that level of effort. And that's always the problem because it's at the county level where the voter databases are maintained.
Let's go back to Cochise County for a second. Oh, hang on. Just got a message. Ingrid says she did not indicate a party affiliation on her registration, but got. I'm reading as it comes across.
Yeah.
Got it filled in for her.
Ooh. Oh.
As a Democrat.
Yeah,
something
that was
tells
actually,
me Ingrid is not a Democrat.
Yeah, that was happening a lot with the...
Ingrid, are you with us? Are you on the phone? Hello, Ingrid. Tom, is she gone?
No, I'm here.
Okay,
I'm
there
here.
She is. Hey, Ingrid. What's going on now?
This happened a few years ago. My registration card had to be renewed, I guess, and they sent me a blank form, and I didn't put in the party. I just left it blank. I don't recall exactly what the reason was for all that, how that happened. I got a new card back saying Democrat. I inquired about that. I said, what's going on? They said, and I'm a libertarian. And they said, well, whenever it's blank, we put in Democrat.
Yeah, that's actually illegal. State law says it's supposed to be PND is what you're supposed to receive a vote.
Preferred not to declare?
Right, correct. And that
that's illegal or legal? What did you say?
It is illegal for someone to designate.
Yeah, sure.
It is illegal for someone to designate you affiliated with a party, even if you left it blank. If you left it blank, party affiliation blank, under the law in the state of Arizona, you should have received a card, a voter registration card that said PND, party not declared. Right. And that's what you should have gotten. You should not have gotten a card that had Republican or Democrat or Libertarian or anything if you left it blank. So that's fishy. And that should have you may have wanted to report that to the
I did.
I don't know what the current Attorney General, she would care much about that, but that's part of the problem.
I wanted to see what would happen if I did that, and my goodness, that's what happened. I was appalled. And at another time, we were having problems with the wrong people voting, the ones who shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And I made inquiries. I went straight up to a top dog in the state, and she said to me, well, when you've been here for 20 years, you have a right to vote.
Wow.
Even if you're not registered. Yeah, this is what's going on. I'll let it go. I know your guest has other things he wants to talk about. I just tuned in, and I happened to hear what you were discussing. I thought I'd throw this in. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks, Ingrid.
Thanks. Again, there was a time a few years ago at the state level where there were people that worked for the Department of Transportation in the Motor Vehicle Division that were filling in, as people filled in there, because when you register to drive, when you put in for your driver's license, part of that form is under Motor Voter, which was a federal program. When you register, when you do your driver's license, there's a little box down there that do you want to register to vote, yes or no? Check the box, yes. And then the next box was, do you want to register as a Republican, Democrat, Independent, or other? And the individuals that left that blank, there was someone that was taking the effort to just check the Democrat box for most of those people. So the legislature stepped in and made it illegal. They passed the law and says that, no, that if it is blank, it will be registered. And that's where PND came from.
You know? Got it. Okay.
PND came from that law that says if you don't check a box, you will be party not declared because you did not declare, you know, Republican, Democrat, Independent, or other. So that was the problem. I believe the form now, because the Libertarian Party sued over that, if I can recall, and it now says Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, and other.
So let's go back to Cochise County.
Sure, sure.
3,000 new registrations come in. 407.
Over 10%.
Well, it's 13.2 or something like that, roughly. Yeah. They can't find the guys.
Correct.
If those 407 went out, is that enough to swing any votes anywhere?
It could have an impact in Siskamani's race, right? So because Siskamani's race covers more than Cochise County, right? So Cochise County is a red county. Most of the elected offices there are held by Republicans. However, because Siskamani's running in Pima and Cochise and Graham counties, he needs every vote out of Cochise County. He needs every vote he can get out of Cochise County.
Okay.
So to dilute his vote, his Republican base vote, if you wanted to try to beat him, the place you would try to beat Siskamani is in Cochise County by getting more Democrat votes and diluting the Republican vote in Cochise County. That would be a political strategy, let's just say. I'm not saying that's happening.
But
that's a strategy, right, to dilute it. Because Cochise County, again, is what, if you look at the numbers, it's a small county. It's only got 120,000 people. But if you look at the margin of victories that Siskamani's had, if it wasn't for Cochise County, he would have lost.
Oh, wow.
Right. So that's the key thing, right? So, and Juan knows that, and he's been out in Cochise County quite a bit because he understands he needs Cochise County. Cochise County isn't going to be the county that wins it for him because the biggest population is Pima County.
But that's the county that keeps him from losing.
That's correct. That's the county that keeps him from losing.
And so looking at it then, those 407 votes,
right,
if they voted for the Democrat, that's an 800 vote swing there.
Yeah,
which is huge when you start to take a look at it.
I mean, and you look at something.
Now you're looking at 26%.
Do you remember the election where Barber won that election by I think it was like 200 and something votes?
Yes.
Yeah. That is a prime example there, and that is that slim margin could have been that that changeover. So yeah, this is serious business.
So let's go back to the 3,000 votes that came in.
Yeah.
2,593
were valid.
That are valid.
Yeah, verified.
Or verified.
Right.
Is part of the process to verify that they actually are eligible to vote?
That is correct. The county recorder does that. They verify their driver's license or some other form of ID.
Well, but once again, they can get a driver's license here apparently without being a legal alien.
There's in the system there's a way to determine that. So
kind of like an e-verify type.
Right. Right. So they're able to make that verification. And so the loophole there, though, Eb, is the federal only ballot loophole, because on the state ballots, if you want a ballot that's going to have state candidates on it, the county recorders verify your U.S. citizenship and your voter eligibility before you can get a state ballot. However, okay, because the federal government passed this law that ID is not required for a federal ballot only, there is such a thing that you would get, if you can't verify citizenship or voter eligibility, that guy, if he's real and he has an address, but he didn't provide you evidence of citizenship or evidence that he's a legitimate voter, short of being a convicted felon where they can find that in the database, they would get a federal-only ballot, which would only have the president and the U.S. Senate and the congressional races on it, and would not have any of the other races, and they would still be able to vote, which is bad.
How many of those are out there in Cochise County?
I don't know. I don't know what that number is off the top of my head. I'd have to ask. But these federal-only ballots are a concern, because you don't have to show definitive evidence that you're a U.S. citizen or an eligible voter to get a federal-only ballot. You just have to show that you physically exist. You can go in with an electric bill and show your electric bill, and as long as it shows an address within the jurisdiction, you can get a ballot.
So I could theoretically rent an apartment under Joe Blow.
Right.
Get an electric bill under Joe Blow.
Right.
Take that in.
I think you have to have two bills or something, or a bank account or something. Yeah, like something like that. But yeah, you can, no photo ID.
Show, here I am.
Yeah,
I want a permanent early ballot. Can you vote by showing up there? Just federal?
Yeah.
Without ID?
Yeah, you get a provisional ballot if you're not in the system.
Don't show ID.
Right.
They always ask me for ID when I go to vote.
Right, right. They should ask you. In Arizona, it's the law. If you're going to vote in state and local elections, you have to be a U.S. citizen.
But in federal.
Yeah, and that's the loophole. And the Democratic Party has sued Arizona before over this. And we just won a major lawsuit at the Supreme Court over voter ID, allowing us to ID voter registration. But again, that loophole is still there for those federal-only ballots, and that's the big challenge, is getting those federal-only ballots out of the system and not allowing them in, and maybe even segregating them and giving them an additional degree of scrutiny, because anytime you have a loophole, people want to exploit that loophole. And that's where the shadiness comes in. And again, when you do that, you create distrust and lack of confidence in the voter. And some people will just say, screw it. The game is rigged. I'm not going to vote at all. You know, that's the frustration.
Yeah, we got another caller.
Oh, Bill, yeah. Bill's a guru at this, so he could correct me if I gave out some erroneous info. But
hey, Bill, you're on the air. What say you?
Yeah, good afternoon. Good to talk to both of you. The thing, and Frank, everything you've said so far is great. The one aspect of voter registration that people overlook, but it's actually one of the most important reasons why voter registration is required, it's so that you're given the correct ballot. You live on one side of the street, and if a number is transposed, you may be actually in the county versus the city, in one school district or another, in a fire district, water district, et cetera, et cetera. Voter registration is very important. And because we have vote centers today, if your voter registration is not directly tied to your physical address, your ability to actually vote in a given election may be compromised. That's why voter registration, for all those folks that are out there that scream bloody murder about it's a right to vote, it's a right to vote, it's a right to vote. Great. It's also a right to vote in the correct jurisdiction.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And in some of these smaller counties, low population counties, that's a big deal because they have these small little school districts, they have these little fire districts, they have all these little small subdivisions, political subdivisions that if you have somebody that's registered at the wrong address voting in that, they can have an impact on the outcome of those small elections. So that's an awesome point, Bill.
Bill, when did they bring in vote centers versus just voting at your local precinct?
It varies on the county. Pima County instituted it a couple years ago. My personal opinion is vote centers, they may speed things along for people, but they forget fundamentally the reason you have polling locations in your precinct is because it's the precinct, the people that live in that precinct that are voting as a group, like it or not, for candidate X, Y, Z, and down the ballot. And when you get away from that, you're basically distancing government from the people. And that is never a good thing. I don't care what your political persuasion happens to be.
So, walk me through this again, why this is really a bad thing versus a good thing.
Think of it this way. The right to vote is basically the only thing we have as citizens that has a regular appointment between the citizen and the government official.
Okay.
Right? It's election day. When you take that away by saying, okay, you actually live on the other side of the county, but we're going to let you vote, downtown Tucson or whatever it happens to be. Okay, that might be convenient for you, but you no longer have that sense of community, that sense of the neighborhood. We're showing up together at this same location on this same day to say, as a community, we believe, depending upon who, gets the majority of the votes, that is how we represent ourselves. And every step you take away from that by having a vote center, oh, it's great, it's convenient, all the laudatory things that the folks want to say about it, you're distancing people from their government, and that is never a good thing. I don't care what form or function it takes. That's never a good thing.
Yeah, so no different than a couple of years ago when I show up at the local church and I see my neighbors running the polling center.
Right.
Yep. Amen. And again, it's that sense of community. And if you think about it historically, the reason you had precincts is so that the people that lived in those neighborhoods could tell if somebody from outside was coming in potentially doing, playing shenanigans with the vote totals.
Like bussing people in.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Not that that would ever happen.
Not that that happens in certain parts of a certain congressional district from a certain longtime Southern Arizona congressperson, right?
Exactly. Or putting in Zuckerbuck boxes or whatever the heck they were doing.
That's true.
Bill, thanks for your call.
Sure.
Frank, we're running up against the clock. We've got 52 seconds left. Any last words?
No, again, people have to get smart. They have to start paying attention. They have to start pressuring their elected officials to put the integrity back in the election system, to restore confidence in the election system. And that takes getting off the couch and getting involved and getting that education and then interacting with those elected officials that can implement those policies and helping them win, first of all, that election. So, I've been a lifelong Republican, so my thing is vote Republican all the way down the ticket. If you want to save this country, you got to vote Republican.
Frank, thanks. It's time for us to go to the top of the or the bottom of the hour news. No, top of the hour news. When we return for hour two, NRA past president John Sigler joins us to discuss the NRA shooting and politics. No channel flipping. We'll be right back.